We have Dr. Rabinowitz on the phone, and I'll be taking him right now. Hope I didn't cut him off. Dr. Rabinowitz.
Yes, hi, Pat. How are you?
Oh, fine, thank you. I was just filling up the air waiting for you to call.
You could have called me early.
Oh, okay.
Just staying alive, so it's all right.
Okay. All right, now I have a kind of a semi-script here. Talking points, I would say, and I assume you have the same one. First of all, tell us a little bit about your practice first, in case no one heard us last week.
I about 5 years ago, started a prevention-based medical practice.
Mm-hmm.
Goes by other names. They use the word direct access medicine, concierge medicine, boutique medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But it's basically old-fashioned medicine. People come to me, they get an hour and a half basically an hour and a half physical. All their visits are half an hour. Everybody, gets their appointments that start on time.
Mm-hmm.
And we do everything for them. So they don't wait to see me. They don't wait to see specialists. They don't wait to get tests.
Mm-hmm.
We arrange everything. And they're basically treated like they're my mother or father, wife or child.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's treated like a family member. But what we're going to talk about today was the obesity epidemic and what we can actually do about that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the advantages of a practice like this is that two thirds of any doctor's practice or two thirds of the population is obese, and means they have excess body weight, which leads to all sorts of health problems. And in our practice, we spend a great deal of time working with people on how to combat that. And it's an ongoing problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you can't do in a typical 6-minute doctor visit. When people go to the doctor, the average visit in America is 6 to 10 minutes. And basically they can get through renewing the medications, maybe deal with one urgent or semi-urgent
mm-hmm.
problem. But something like dealing with excess body weight, which leads to sleep apnea, diabetes,
mm-hmm.
high blood pressure, high cholesterol, stroke, heart attack, and believe it or not, many cancers, as many as 1 in 3 cancer deaths are linked to excess body weight.
Is there something about breast cancer that's linked to obesity also, or no?
Yeah, well, what happens with it, it's seen in postmenopausal women that have gone through the change
mm-hmm.
of life,
mm-hmm.
And they can't, not as much in younger women, but the what happens is an excess adipose tissue or excess fat tissue
mm-hmm.
that can produce estrogen, which can, even though a woman has gone through menopause and the ovary no longer produces it, it still is made in fat cells, and that can stimulate the formation of cancer in a woman's breast.
Mm-hmm.
We deal with that a lot in women that have already been diagnosed with breast cancer
mm-hmm.
to try and get their body mass index lower. So that it doesn't provide stimulation, for the cancer. But interestingly, what people don't know is it increases the risk of esophageal cancer by 500 times.
Are
it
you kidding?
The risk of colon cancer, uterine cancer, kidney cancers, and pancreatic cancers as well.
All right. Now, what are we calling obese? How many pounds?
Well, that's a good thing. How do you make that definition?
Mm-hmm.
There's different ways.
What's the difference between chubby and obese?
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Oh.
Some people like looking at that. What doctors use is a term called a body mass index.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means in English is, if somebody could figure this out, if they're listening at home,
mm-hmm.
you take your weight in pounds, and then you take your height, and you divide your weight by your height squared. So you take whatever your height would be in
mm-hmm.
inches, multiply it by itself, and then that gets divided into the weight. That number gets divided, or multiplied rather, by 703. So
mm-hmm.
it's your weight divided by your height squared
mm-hmm.
times 703.
Mm-hmm.
So a normal person would have a body mass index between 18 and 25. Anyone whose body mass index is over 25 is considered overweight,
mm-hmm.
and if it's over 30, it's considered obese. So what does that actually mean in English, and
in pounds.
Care? Excuse me?
In pounds, what does it mean, obesity?
Well, it doesn't have units.
Oh.
It's your weight in pounds divided by your height squared.
Oh, okay.
703. So the 703 is a constant. But what it actually means, in other words, you could have somebody that may be 300 pounds, but they're 7 feet tall.
Right.
and that person would not be obese. Mm-hmm. The other thing too is with men, sometimes they can have a BMI that's a body mass index that's over 25, mm-hmm. And be very muscular. So what you do in a case like that is you'll use their waist circumference, so that a person should have a waist circumference, if it's a man, less than 40 inches, mm-hmm. and if it's a woman, less than 35 inches. Mm-hmm. Because what's called centripetal obesity can also contribute. It is actually a much higher risk of colon cancer in people that have centripetal obesity, and much higher risk of coronary disease, heart attacks, and strokes. But what's sort of important about that number is that every time you go up by a factor of five, so let's say you go from 30 to 35 or 35 to 40, you shorten your lifespan by 2 years.
Yikes.
So it does make a difference. So somebody that may have a BMI of 40 may shorten their lifespan by as much as 8 years.
Oh, my goodness. Scary. Okay, so what do we do about this?
Epidemic. There's a lot you do about it. The first is sort of having the conversation with the patient when they come in. Uh-huh. What we do in our practice is everybody gets an hour and a half physical every year. Uh-huh. So we sit down and we really train that. And then what I do is I have a series of teaching tools. And you can probably look at some of this online, where the current recommendations are that people should be getting half of their meal from, fruits and vegetables, mm-hmm. And about a third from protein, and mm-hmm. about a quarter from protein and a quarter from carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't work for everybody. For example, I've met with endocrinologists who are specialists in this. It's very difficult to gain fat from eating lean protein. So somebody could eat a lot of fish, grilled, not cooked in butter.
Mm-hmm.
They could eat a lot of lean turkey, lean chicken, and you could have more than a quarter of your plate. It could be half of your plate.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to gain weight. So one can alter with that, and with carbohydrates. A baked potato is without anything on it is only 160 calories. A mm-hmm. piece of toast, whole wheat toast, is 69 calories.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you do need some carbohydrate in your diet. We just try to limit the amount of carbohydrate.
What about sugar?
Excuse me?
Sugar. That's probably the worst offender, don't you think?
Right. Yeah. That's what our current thinking tells us.
Uh-huh.
It changes. Time magazine had an article that said, now butter's good for you. Well, butter's not exactly good for you in large quantities.
No.
But it's not as bad as was once thought. We mm-hmm. used to think that eggs shouldn't be eaten because they were too high in cholesterol and they were bad for you. And then studies proved that that's not true. That in moderation, a couple of eggs a week are probably not going to contribute to obesity or to advanced mm-hmm. coronary disease. But one of the other things we do in the office mm-hmm. is there are many applications for your phone. Most people have a smartphone
mm-hmm.
or a personal computer. You could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we have helped people achieve 70, 80 pounds of weight loss by just training them how to use an app on their phone where they can enter their vital statistics, their height and their weight.
Mm-hmm.
Their level of activity, and from that point forward, the program will tell them about how many calories they should be eating on a given day,
mm-hmm.
and then they begin to record it. And what it does is it provides both positive and negative feedback that if you're eating food that's too high in fat, it'll tell you that. It'll
mm-hmm.
read the food for you and tell you it's, it's harmful. And then you look and say, I'm not going to eat that again. I can tell you a personal experience. I was working with a patient and we were going over what they were eating, and I said, well, let me show you what I gave my kids for breakfast one morning, and they like croissants, so I went over to a local supermarket and bought a croissant, and the difference between American portions and European portions are vastly different. If one goes to either Montreal or to France, croissants are very small. In America, they came out of a nuclear reactor. They're huge.
I know.
So the nuclear reactor size croissant, which is all fat and butter, is about 560 calories.
Oh, my
now,
goodness.
Now, here I am. I'm a doctor. I'm an educated guy. And mm-hmm. I'm looking at this, but I never really thought about it before until I had to start working with patients.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I wasn't doing my kids a favor. I mean, once in a while, it's certainly fine. But you know, on a daily basis.
No.
It's not a good thing to do. So education is critically important. That I work with, teaching people apps. And there's medicines on the market, which...
yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
There are now many, there are multiple FDA-approved medicines for use in weight loss. The American Academy of Clinical Endocrinology came out with a position statement, but doctors really don't do a great job in educating their patients that these medicines exist, that they work and they're safe. Now, they don't produce huge weight loss amounts. They produce maybe 5%, at best maybe 10%. I can tell you from personal experience, I have patients that have lost 50, 60, 70 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, over a year, sometimes 2 years, with using these drugs. People may remember years ago there was a combination called Fen-Phen. It was very mm-hmm. popular, and then they found out that it was the fenfluramine portion was leading to heart valve abnormalities,
right.
And that was withdrawn from the market. But the other portion of it, the fenfluramine portion, didn't. That can be used alone, but it's actually much more effective when they combine it with a medicine called topiramate, which started out as an epileptic drug, but it's used by neurologists nearly all over the world and internists and headache specialists to prevent migraine headaches.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the effects of the medication is it reduces the appetite center in the brain, so people just aren't hungry. And that combination works. There's another medicine that's modeled after, the antidepressant family. That works. There are injectable medicines, believe it or not, that were of the same chemical family that are used to treat diabetes, but they're not insulin. And that causes also about a 5 to 10% weight loss. So when people come in, once again, I always go back to the fact, you just can't get this in a 6-minute doctor visit with a quick body massage.
Mm-mm.
And you're out the door.
Mm-mm.
This is something that takes a lot of time. You really have to sit with people. You have to bring them back for their visits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things I also deal with, in addition, before I put a patient on these medicines, I really insist that they meet with a nutritionist. Because when you meet with a nutritionist, and most people's health care plans cover this for a number of visits,
mm-hmm.
you can sit and ask people, what do you like to eat? Which is very important, and nutritionists can work with them and give them examples and hints of different food types. What I often do is when I sit with my patients, I want to find out what their habits are, because you do need to begin to alter the habits. It's not enough to just eat less food because you're not hungry,
mm-hmm.
but what you put in your mouth counts. And there's lots of different techniques and little tricks we use with people, to help them change the habits. I also often tell them, in order to change a habit, it takes at least 6 weeks. That's how the brain works. It occurs in what's called the basal ganglia of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to make maybe one, at most two habit changes at a time. And then you have to reinforce that. And then over time, you can make multiple habit changes and get it to stick. It's sort of like changing the course of a ship. If you change the course of a couple mm-hmm. of degrees, you end up in a whole other country.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting analogy. How about this, though? Aren't some people, they go to these nutrition shops, or I won't even use any names. A lot of these medications have caffeine in them. Now, that's not good for some people, correct?
With the caffeine?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, if somebody has a propensity to have an irregular heartbeat,
mm-hmm.
That may not be good. It depends how much caffeine is in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fascinating thing about medicine is that every year there's another study that claims something that was bad for you is good for you, and something that we thought was good for you is bad for you. So, but the current thinking is that, for example, the amount of caffeine that's found in coffee may actually be preventative against stroke.
Mm-hmm.
But I
just read that.
You may be referring to the green coffee bean extract.
Yes, exactly. I didn't want to say.
There was a very well-known physician with the television show that was where Congress investigated this and said, wait a minute, you're selling this and you're branding it and getting, remuneration for it, but there's no evidence that it works. And you can go online and you can see all sorts of natural substances that people claim are good for weight loss. I'm a medical doctor.
Yeah, right.
So that anything that I'm going to recommend to a patient, I can take them to, you know, the Library of Congress. I can take them to any of our medical sources of information, New England Journal, and show to them, look, this has been studied, and it's been approved by the FDA. And in, you know, it doesn't help every patient in every case. When people say, well, doctor, I read this article online or I saw this on television, at that point I can say, look, if you want to do it, as long as it's not been pulled off the market by the FDA, you can do it at your own risk. But it's not something that I necessarily hang my hat on. I just haven't seen great results with it.
Right. Well, now, if somebody wants to get in touch with you now about this, about weight loss, about anything, what do we do?
Well, they just called 215-PREVENT, or they can get me at 215-PREVENT.com. And I give everybody a half an hour free consultation. I sit down with people. I just listen to what their concerns are. And by the end of the half an hour, I tell them how I believe I can help them.
Good. Now, and so you are, what category would you be in then, a general practitioner?
Well, I mean, I'm an internal.
You're an internist, okay.
Yes, I'm an internal medicine.
Well, that's good. That's great. Well, anyway, this was very interesting. You hit a hot topic here. We all like to talk about our weight and weight loss and that sort of thing. And I think it's better if people do it with a medical doctor. And one last thing before you go. How do you feel about the surgery options?
Well, what the Endocrinology Societies recommend is that before a patient takes that leap, that they try medicines. That they said before they do it, these medicines that I mentioned do work. They're helpful. They have to be monitored and prescribed by a physician.
Right.
But before that, having said that, there are people with very serious health problems, and they've had tried. And in my experience, the people that have had a gastric bypass surgery have not tried it. And I think in some cases, look, the evidence is there. It really helps people lose weight and can reverse conditions such as sleep apnea, diabetes.
Yes.
Depending upon how that operation is done, it could basically cure type 2 diabetes in some people. Mm-hmm. But what I don't think people realize is that you need to change your behavior. And so that just the fact that your stomach is now smaller and you physically can't tolerate large quantities of food because you would throw up, eventually you can stretch that out. And I've seen many, many people put their weight back on. I've seen
all sorts of complications.
I've seen serious complications. I've seen deaths from this. So it's nothing to be taken lightly. I think that, you know, when it should be done in a large medical center. And I think people need to be followed for that for the rest of their life by specialists. They can have become vitamin deficient. So it's not the panacea. It's not the cure-all. I think it is life-saving for many, many people. But I think that there's many other alternatives. Patients will say, well, I've tried everything. Well, they probably haven't tried everything. They may have gotten frustrated with what they've done. but there is a lot to offer short of surgery.
Well, there is. And I thank you very much, Dr. Rabinowitz. It was great.
I think it was nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you. It was very interesting. And we'll keep in touch. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye.